Welcome, everyone. I'm Marilyn Stern, Associate Fellow with the Forum, and I'll be your chair. We're pleased to welcome David P. Goldman, also an Associate Fellow with the Forum, to give his remarks on what scenarios may be in store for an Egypt in economic disarray. Most of you would be familiar with Mr. Goldman's column in Asia Times Online, where he writes under the pseudonym Spengler. As an economist and noted demographer who has held senior positions on Wall Street, Mr. Goldman has followed and written about Egypt's economic deterioration and financial mismanagement for several years. Current events in Egypt find the Muslim Brotherhood-led government rejecting the IMF's demands for economic reform. The country of Qatar, a supporter of Hamas and of the Islamist-leaning rebel factions in Libya and Syria, has stepped into the breach and extended low-interest loans to Egypt in order to gain influence in the region. How will this affect future scenarios, as well as the other mounting problems plaguing Egypt under the Morsi regime? Mr. Goldman?
Thank you very much for that kind introduction, Marilyn. Regarding Qatar, I think it's important to keep numbers in perspective. Egypt's annual financing requirement is probably around $30 billion right now. Qatar's total foreign exchange reserves are about $20 billion, and the $3 billion that they got from Qatar and about $2 billion from Libya in the last few weeks tie them over for 7 or 8 weeks of their trade deficit, which is now running around $40 billion a year. It's my contention that the Egyptian economy is an unfixable disaster, and that the country will become a failed state as a result. The reason I was so convinced 2 years ago that the Egyptian economy was a disaster is that it followed a pattern which we had seen before in important respects in Latin America during the debt crisis of the 1980s, although with one extremely important difference, which I'll come to. It is typical of dictatorships in third world countries that they attempt to maintain social control by keeping a very large part of the population on the land, impoverished, without access to communications, and uneducated. And the classic example of that in the Western Hemisphere was Mexico under the Institutional Revolutionary Party dictatorship that emerged on the Mussolini-Stalin model during the 1930s. A number of Mexican analysts have shown that the Mexican model was basically adopted from the Stalin collective farm model, and in the 1980s, Mexico's rural population was shaken loose by an economic and currency crisis, which constituted an economic collapse, which did not lead to revolutionary consequences or social chaos for two important reasons. The first is that something like a fifth of the Mexican population moved to the United States. The American border represented an enormous safety valve. And the second is that Mexico was a food producer. It rarely was a net importer of food. We have comparable conditions emerging in Egypt over the last several years, both before and after the overthrow of Hosni Mubarak at the end of January 2011, with one important difference. You have an economic collapse happening in a country which is dependent on imports for 50% of its total food consumption. This makes the Egyptian economic crisis unique and intractable among the many crises that we've seen. Something like 70% of Egypt's population lives on the land, either is engaged in farming or service to farming. Nonetheless, it imports roughly half its food. The functional literacy rate is estimated around 45%, and Egypt, for the most part, although it has a superficial crust of educated and sophisticated urbanized people, remains a profoundly pre-modern society at the roots. Roughly one-third of Egyptians marry their cousins, which is a hallmark of tribal pre-modern societies, and sadly, roughly 90% of Egyptian women are subject to genital mutilation, according to the World Health Organization. although it does have a large student population, Egypt's universities, unlike universities in some other places in the Muslim world, Tunisia and Turkey would be examples, are completely dysfunctional. Egyptian university graduates are basically qualified to do nothing but stamp each other's passports. And it's impossible to find an employable pool of labor who can meet the criteria of multinational corporations. That is not a uniquely Muslim characteristic. Tunisia has terrible problems, but Tunisian university graduates are frequently hired by the help desks of French computer companies. Turkey has a reasonably good, as at least a small number, of very, very good universities. Egypt has no such thing. So Egypt is a banana republic in terminal crisis without the bananas. Now, I say that metaphorically because Daniel Pipes assures me that during his stay in Egypt, he ate bananas. They were quite good, but they don't have enough bananas to make much of a difference in terms of the caloric consumption of Egyptians. Now, as I mentioned, the economic crisis began independently of the governance of Egypt, and I certainly think that the deterioration in the Egyptian economy was a major contributor to the events that led to the overthrow of Hosni Mubarak, what is often, and in my view, erroneously called the Arab Spring. Starting in the mid-2000s, Egypt's import bill went out of control. It went from about $10 billion a year of imports during the early 2000s to about $60 billion at the present. The main reason for the spectacular increase in its import bill is a change in relative prices. There has been a great shift in the world economy. Countries run by dictatorships immured in backwardness can, in principle, go on indefinitely unless some outside shock interrupts their trajectory. The great outside shock that interrupted the trajectory of the Egyptian Arab nationalist dictatorship was the emergence of Asia, which forced up the price of food, in particular wheat, of which Egypt is the world's largest importer. The first food riots occurred in 2008 because of shortages of bread, and Egypt's financial position began to deteriorate and has deteriorated continuously. It is certainly the case that the collapse of the tourism industry has exacerbated Egypt's financial problems, and the instability arising from the overthrow of Mubarak and the ascendancy of a Muslim Brotherhood government contributed to that decline in tourism revenue. But it should be kept in perspective. Egypt never earned more than $14 billion a year from tourism, and its annual financing requirement is around $30 billion. So Egypt has been shopping a loan package around the world, which an Associated Press estimate put at $30 billion, which was more or less confirmed by the Egyptian government. Some of its Sunni neighbors and friends have kicked in, like Qatar and Libya. Significantly, Russia turned them down for loans, and Iraq, which is a majority Shiite nation and has a Shiite government, turned them down as well. So with an enormous trade deficit and a huge amount of urgent import requirements, Egypt is literally is running on the fumes at the moment. As I mentioned, the Libyan and Qatari loans, which came in the last few weeks at about $5 billion, give them a couple of months of leeway, but not much more. There has been a drastic reduction in basic food imports of everything but wheat, in fact, including wheat. The last number we have for wheat stockpiles is in April, and they only had 68 days on hand. It's been widely reported in the press that the Morsi government has counted on a very significant increase in the wheat harvest this year and has not placed import orders for wheat. The U.S. Embassy issued a report saying that the government's estimates are wildly optimistic, mainly because there isn't enough fuel to run the tractors to spread fertilizer to get the wheat crop grown, and even if it were grown, there isn't enough fuel to transport the wheat from rural areas to silos. So although there is enough, there's certainly enough bread, enough caloric consumption available to Egyptians at the moment through government-subsidized bread, this may change radically by July. And this, as I said, is a view of the U.S. Embassy. In the meantime, most Egyptians are eating a great deal less, and the Egyptian poor, between 20 and 40% of the population, are eating substantially no protein at all. No milk, no eggs, and certainly no meat. There is an estimate from the World Food Program that 30% of the population is now suffering from malnutrition. There's always a great deal of the Egyptian population has always been very poor. The figure that you normally see is that about half the population lives on $2 a day or less, which means they spend roughly half their income on food. Because of the financial crisis, which has led to a significant devaluation of the Egyptian pound, the price of fava beans, which is the next most important staple after bread, has risen by 40% this year to date. Imports of meat, fish, and chicken are down by about 25%, and the prices of milk products, according to the Egyptian press, has risen by 60% since January. Imported milk, by the way, accounts for about two-thirds of consumption. So Egypt at the moment is being told by the Western powers to cut food subsidies, which are directed towards the poor. Of course, a large part of the food subsidies are misused. There's a great deal of corruption and inefficiency in the system, but they are a means of keeping the poor alive. The Morsi government is very afraid to change the subsidy system because they fear popular rebellion should they do that. So instead of finishing the negotiations with the International Monetary Fund, which has been spun out for more than a year, the government is taking a number of really extraordinary measures which will lead to considerable problems in the future. One is to shut down natural gas exports and consume the natural gas domestically because they can't afford oil imports. The electricity system in Egypt is suffering rolling blackouts on a scale which is severely disruptive to the economy. One anecdote sums up how severe it is. It appears that the retrial of Hosni Mubarak and his two sons may have to be postponed because the area in which they live, in Suez, has 22 hours a day of blackouts, and they haven't had the power to run computers to study the trial documents. The government has not only shut off natural gas exports, about two-thirds of natural gas production goes to the electricity sector, so there's a direct relationship between the ability to run the generators and natural gas availability. The government has asked major industries to shut down production in the course of the summer to save natural gas for electricity production because there are already substantial protests, road blockages, and so forth by Egyptians who aren't getting electric power. Now, of course, if you shut down your exports and you stop running your industries, you're going to earn less money and exacerbate the financial crisis in the future. But these measures have been forced on the government because it simply lacks the money to purchase the fuel required to run the generators. So the economy is shutting down progressively. There are endemic fuel and electricity shortages. The availability of protein for perhaps 30-40% of the Egyptian population has effectively been eliminated. People are eating bread and almost nothing else. And a large part of the rest of the population is eating a great deal less protein. It's hard to estimate how grave the damage is. In the Egyptian newspapers, there are many anecdotal reports of increasing malnutrition among children, as well as lack of medications in clinics. The population is in severe distress. How this will play out politically, it's hard to know. How it will play out financially is also impossible to predict, because to the extent Egypt is able to fill its begging bowl month by month because various other countries in the region decide that postponing state failure in Egypt is a wise thing to do, is impossible to guess. I don't know what the Qataris are going to do, but I do know that they don't have enough money on hand to sustain Egypt for a year by themselves. The big question is, what will Saudi Arabia do? The only scenario under which the Egyptian economy could at least be temporarily stabilized would be for a country the size of Saudi Arabia to make a substantial donation, not a loan, but a donation. Technically speaking, something else could happen. Stephen Cook of the Council on Foreign Relations last week proposed in his blog that the United States, Europe, and Asia combine and use all their resources to provide low-interest long-term loans to Egypt to stave off economic collapse. I think the probability of that happening is vanishingly small. Stephen Cook, some of you may recall, had attacked me on his blog some months ago, claiming that I really wish for the collapse of the Egyptian economy. I wish for no such thing. My view is that if this really were a short-term and correctable problem, it would be in the interest of the United States to at least consider providing substantial aid, provided that we could get the kind of conditions from the Morsi government that would satisfy us. However, I think that's a moot point, because this is not a cyclical or short-term crisis. This is a structural crisis of a country whose incapacity to deal with a modern industrial world has been exposed by the events of the last couple of years. So I don't know how quickly this will happen, but I do believe that we're proceeding towards state failure. The reason the Saudis are not likely to fund the Egyptians, of course, is because the Saudi royal family, is probably more hostile to the Muslim Brotherhood than any other political entity in the world. The Muslim Brotherhood represents the only kind of political organization which could displace the Saudi monarchy as the ruler of the peninsula, and the Saudi monarchy is deathly afraid of it. So I think it's unlikely that that's going to happen. It's conceivable that a change in government, for example, some general whom the Saudis like might come to power and replace Morsi, and in that case, obtain financing from the Saudis. But that's a purely speculative conjecture. I don't have any information about the state of internal Egyptian politics and jockeying within the military. So if asked, I will plead ignorance. I'm simply speaking for a hypothetical. So in conclusion, I believe that the result is a slow grind towards state failure and truly appalling levels of suffering on the part of the Egyptian population, which are unlikely to be remedied by any combination of forces that I can presently identify. With that, I'd like to thank you for your attention. I will stop